want something and you're inspired in some direction, just go for it. Try it. My name is Emily Warner. I live in the Lowry area in Denver, Colorado. I was a commercial airline pilot. My first airline was Frontier Airlines.
I'd like to start at the beginning of when you were growing up here in Denver. And maybe you could just describe where you were born and where you grew up.
I was born in Denver, Colorado in October. And October 30th, that is the day before Halloween. But when I was growing up, I had four brothers and one twin sister. But I was very ornery and I used to give them a lot of hard times. So they used to say, Emily, you should be flying a broomstick. You know, I think when I was a kid, that kind of stuck with me because I ended up getting a career in aviation, which kind of led along the path. My mother was a mezzo soprano, and I went to St. Catherine's and Holy Family High School in North Denver. And my mother was a mezzo soprano, and she sang at the church masses. She had a wonderful, wonderful voice. It never carried over to any of the kids, unfortunately.
And your father?
My father, he worked for the Railway Express. It's sort of like UPS is today.
Mm-hmm. And you said you had multiple brothers.
Yes, I had four brothers. And when I was growing up, I have a twin sister, but I was kind of ornery. I had a brother, Dick, and he'd be getting ready for dates. And a lot of times I would go just when he's about ready, he's gotten all dressed and ready for his date. I come in and spray him with some perfume. You know, but when I think about it, I think he'd really get mad, but when I think about it, it probably helped him on his date to smell a little better.
You said you went to Holy Family High School.
High school.
What was it like for a girl, a high school girl, during that time period? What kind of experiences did you have as a young student there at the school, and what kind of courses were you encouraged to take?
Well, in those days, it was basically the basic courses, reading, writing, arithmetic, and some courses after that. My sister Eileen and I, we were kind of like the poor girls in the class. And so a lot of times, you know, we didn't make as many friends as the others, but the friends that I did make were friends for a lifetime. Because we had the other groups, and you've been through that probably in high school, the other groups that kind of like, you can't walk down the same side of the street with them and so forth. So, but it was a good experience, so you learn about life from that kind of experiences. But I did work for the, I started to work early on. The nuns asked for some help and with some of their work, and the computer was just coming in then, and so I kind of learned the basic computer work, and I would help the nuns usually a couple times a week after school, and I worked with them so long that one of them said to me one time, Emily, you know, why don't you become a nun? You're just perfect for it. And well, I didn't think I was perfect for it, but but they were kind of wanted me to join them, which was a compliment in a lot of ways.
Were the girls and boys in the high school, were they encouraged in different directions?
Yes. In high school at that time, girls and boys were kind of directed in different directions. With the boys always, you know, of course, the mechanical things and all that stuff. And the girls were always, you know, go to college, or you can work in restaurants, or you can do this or that, you know. But it was never encouraging you to anything more than that. It was like, it wasn't forward yet in that age to where it is today, where, you know, there's so much more influence to women to do what they want and get the careers they want. So there was a difference in that respect.
Did you ever ask if you could take classes that only the boys were allowed to take?
Well, there were a couple. I used to go into a class that the boys would meet at, and they would have a class going on, and I'd walk in once in a while. And it was at a time where one of our students had passed away from polio. And I really felt bad about him, and I knew that he was a great friend of all of the guys in the school. So I walked into the meeting they were having, and I just said, I just wanted to come in and tell you how sorry I am that he passed away. And it was like, it was a real brave of me to do that, because I was walking in into the guys' get-together, and I was walking in. But you know, after that, I think they really appreciated it, and I was more accepted. And they kind of like knew who I was then, you know what I mean? It was kind of in that respect.
You got to join the...
Yeah.
The gang, right?
The gang, yeah.
So, were there experiences when you were a teenager that made you think you might want to be a pilot? Did you really see that yet, or...?
No, I didn't see that yet. What I did see after I got out of high school is I was working at the Old May Company in downtown Denver, and I would see stewardesses, they called them in those days, go through shopping, and I'd say, gee, that might be a good job, you know? And there was a nice gal working with me, and I was talking to her about it. She said, well, what, have you ever flown in an airplane? And I said, well, no. And she said, you really ought to see if you like it before you watch what the flight attendants are doing, stewardesses at that time, were doing. And I thought it was a great idea, and I'd never flown in an airplane before. So I went home and I asked my mom if I could fly at Gunnison and check it out and see if I liked flying. And she said, oh, that's kind of foolish. And I said, well, just, I'll buy my own ticket, Mom. I said, I just want to go over and see the college. And so she agreed to it. And then so I got my flight over to and it was on Frontier Airlines from Denver to Gunnison. And it was Western State College I was going to. And on the way over, I watched the flight attendants were working, and I thought, well, this is kind of interesting. And I looked out the window, and then I didn't get airsick. That was good. And all those things were going through my mind. And but on the way back, we landed, had a great weekend. And on the way back, though, there were not too many people in the airplane. One of the stewardesses said, Emily, if you think you like, would you like to see the cockpit? Because I was really talking about it. I said, oh, I would love to. She said, let me see if I can get your permission. And in those days, it was a lot easier than it is today. So I was invited into the cockpit of a Frontier DC-3. And there's a jump seat that folds down between the two pilot seats. So they folded down this jump seat, and I sat down, and I looked out the front window, and it just hit me how beautiful it was and how different than looking out a side window, because it's all right in front of you. It's not like looking out a side window in an airplane. It's all in front of you. And we were coming across the mountains, and it was just beautiful. It was a beautiful day. And the pilots were very great. And as we got closer to Denver, one of the pilots said to me, well, Emily, by this time they knew my name, if you like flying so much, why don't you take flying lessons? And I said, gee, can a girl take flying lessons? That's how it was, you know. And they said, sure you can. And they told me about Clinton Aviation, which was a flight school in Denver. So I, had a great flight. I went home and I checked it out. And then I asked my mother, because she kind of ran the kids, And I said, Mom, I really enjoyed my flight. And I said, what would you think? Would it be okay with you if I took a couple of flying lessons? And she said, oh, that's foolish, first thing she said. And I didn't let that stop me. I said, well, just a couple and see if I like it. I said, I'll pay for them myself. And she said, well, okay. And so then I started my flying lessons. And I loved it right off the bat. And was taking them, and I probably had 5 or 6 flying lessons. And my mother would say once in a while, "Well, are you still taking those flying lessons?" And I'd always say, "Well, just a couple of more, Mom, just a few more." And I got to the point where I was making my own takeoffs, you know, and landings. You work up to it. And one day the flight instructor got out of the airplane and he said, and he had gone around the pattern, they call it a traffic pattern, with me about 3 times. And then we pulled over and he said, "Let's pull over here and stop." And so he pulled over and stopped. And he said, and he got out of the airplane, he said, "You're going to go solo now." That means solo for the first time. And he made sure my seatbelt was fastened. And he said, and I wasn't too, you know, in my mind I was thinking, "Really?" And then he said, "I want you to go around the traffic pattern, make 2 landings, and then come back and pick me up, you know, where I left him off." So I went around the pattern, I made 2 touch-and-go landings. A touch-and-go landing is when you land and then take off again, right, from that point. And so I made it, and I came back and picked him up. And it was really one of the most exciting things in my whole life, is being in the airplane for the first time all by myself. And I was just dying to tell somebody. And I was riding in the bus on the way home from the airport, and I wanted to tell somebody that I just soloed the airplane, but I had to wait really until they got back. And when my parents got back, I told my mother, I said, "Mother, guess what I did while you were gone?" And she said, "What's that?" And I said, "I soloed the airplane." And she said, "You mean you went by yourself?" And I said, "Yes." I thought my flying days might be over. But she said, "Well, I guess those flying lessons are okay." And from that point, I started to do more solo and building my flight time. I got a job at Clinton Aviation, and I started out as a receptionist. And that was for people that came in and would help the people out, and for airplanes that had come in and need gas and that sort of thing. So it was just kind of a job going like that. And I continued working for quite a while. I was taking my flying lessons, and I got my private license as your first license, and then my commercial license. And then I was working on my instructor rating. And after I got my instructor rating, I asked Lou Clinton, you know, I said, you know, could I possibly start be an instructor and get on the instructor? And he was a little unsure about that. And he said, "Well, if you can pick up some of your own students, you know, you can try it out." It was like, put it all in my lap, and because the other instructors would all be assigned students. Well, he said, "If you can get a couple of students, you can." So I did. I got 2 or 3 students going, and pretty soon I had 4 or 5, and by the time I had about 6 of my own students, Mr. Clinton called me into his office one day, and he said, "Well, Emily," he said, "I guess that you're going to have to be a full-time flight instructor now." And it was like I had to prove myself first before they let me go on, because I was a girl, you know. And after that, it was just, you know, it was home free. The Korean War came in, and there were a lot of pilots. Well, the war had ended, and there were Clinton got a lot of people from the Air Force and different areas that came out, because they were getting government free flying from the government. So we were really busy. Clinton Aviation was really busy for about 3 years. Giving these lessons, so I built up so much flying time, and I had and what the other flight instructors would do is they get enough flying time, they go off to an airline, and I used to think, "Well, I wish I could do that," and continued on. I was building flight time, and after a while, I thought, instead of "I wish I could go off to an airline," I said, "Well, why can't I go to an airline?" And that's when I really started to apply. And it took me about 3 years, but finally, and I did a lot of camping on doorsteps. Continental, United, and Frontier were the airlines that I chose. Frontier was, of course, my first choice. And United hadn't been hiring for years, and they had a real backup. And Continental, they weren't real excited about a woman pilot, you know, but So the Frontier, I kept trying and trying, and finally I get a call from Frontier Airlines one day, and they said, well, Mr. O'Neill, because I had been, I'd been applying so often that my name was up, you know, and people were talking about it. So I got an interview with Ed O'Neill, who was the president of Frontier at the time, and I went into his office and sat down, and he said, well, and went through my biography and all that stuff, and he said, well, I don't know, he said, about, you know, if this is going to work out. He said, what would we do for a uniform for you? And I said, Mr. O'Neill, that's the least of your problems. And I think that kind of captured him right there. And he said, well, he said, okay. He said, I would like to have you meet L. Feldman. So the word was really getting around. And L. Feldman was the president of Frontier at the time. And so I met with L. Feldman, and it was really interesting meeting with him. Because the first thing he said, well, it's nice to meet you, Emily. And he said, would you mind if I make a phone call? Well, he called his wife on the phone. It was, to me, it was so strange. And he said, he was talking to her, and I could only hear one side of the conversation. And it was like, what do you think, you know, there's a woman pilot, wants to be a woman pilot here. And they were talking about that. And I thought it was a strange conversation. And he said, well, thank you for letting me talk to my wife. And she happened to be on the board of directors for a huge company in California. So she was like a first woman with the company in California. I'm trying to think of the company name right now. And she was the first woman hired there. So it was kind of a connection. And so that was why he made the phone call to ask her if what she thought of it. And of course, she probably said, I didn't hear the other side of the conversation. She said, I think she said something like, you better hire her, Al. So anyway, I got my job. Then I went from being a co-pilot eventually to being a captain. Most of my flying was very safe. You know, there's an old saying about aviation, hours and hours of sheer boredom interrupted by moments of stark terror. Well, I had a few of those moments, you know, like crosswinds were always a big thing. With a light airplane, crosswinds, you want to land into the wind, basically, and sometime you'd have to make a crosswind landing, but I got real good at crosswind landings. And my biggest break was going to Wichita, Kansas, being able to fly the airplanes back from Wichita. Frontier went from Cessna 140s to 150s, Cessna 150s. And I got to go and pick those airplanes up. And I went, the first time I went with a gentleman, we went on an airplane together down to Wichita, Kansas. And he kind of checked me out with it to show me how to get into the airport now, and kind of the first time thing. And then I started to go pick up these airplanes. And it was a wonderful experience. It was free flying time, but the airplanes had no radios in them. So I would have to call, I would get permission on the telephone from the controller, and they'd watch for me and give me a green light. Green light means you're cleared to go, yellow is caution, and a red light, of course, is you're not clear to go, or clear to take off. So as I came back to Denver with these new airplanes, and I ferried a lot of them, I'd land at Old Sky Ranch Airport, and I'd call Denver Tower and tell them where I was, and that I had no radio, and would they watch for me as I came in. And as it started to go, I'd go in and look for the light, and they'd give you a yellow light at first, and then when it was clear, that means caution. And then the green light would come up, and then that means you're clear to land. So after I ferried so many of those airplanes, probably about 15 or 20, I was doing all the ferrying, but it was free flight time for me, and it would help Clinton Aviation out too. They didn't have to pay somebody to do it. But the control tower at Stapleton, Old Stapleton, got so used to CB coming that when I'm called from Sky Ranch, as soon as I took off, I had a green light. And so I just go on in and land. They just got so used to me coming in with these new airplanes. So that was a great experience.
So you never got a red light?
No, never got a red light.
Oh, that's great.
I was a captain on the 737 in Frontier when they went down. And then I went to UPS, and they had Boeing 727s, which is a three-engine aircraft. So I went to training for that. And that is a very interesting airplane, a lot bigger than the 737. It was an airplane that I always loved to, my landings I always wanted to grease them on. But the 727, you could never tell on that airplane. You thought you're coming in for a landing, you thought, oh, this is gonna be a greaser, and then you, bam, you know, you're on the ground. And then other times they say, oh, this isn't gonna work out too well, and then a grease is on. So you, with that airplane, you could never tell. I mean, they were all good landings, but when a pilot says a grease on, you wanna land so you can hardly feel it, you know. And you've been in airplanes that, like that. When I was first hired and I started flying, the flight attendants come early in the morning and make the coffee and so forth. Well, the flight attendants really didn't like the idea that there was a woman in the cockpit. I mean, it was really funny. And you would think that woman would be very supportive of another woman, you know? And so I came around that by, I'd get there first before the flight attendants came, and I would make the coffee. First thing a flight attendant does is make coffee when they get on the airplane to be ready for the passengers. Well, I made the coffee, and after I'd been making it for a while, one of the stewards said, a flight attendant at that time, I guess, one of the flight attendants said, well, who made the coffee? And I said, well, I did. And she said, well, really? She said, that's nice of you. She said, well, I enjoy making the coffee for you. And she said, that's great. And the word got around and was like, I was really accepted then. I was great.
You were one of the girls.
I was one of the girls.
Or is there any other story or anything else you'd like to say about that?
No, I'm just, I always feel fortunate that I was led in that direction and that I followed the course. And I always, when I talk to young people or young women, I say, if you want something and you're inspired in some direction, just go for it. Try it. And whether it's flying or something else. So I try to inspire young people that way.
Who would you say is the most important mentor that you had? Mentor or a fellow pilot or someone who gave you the most support?
My most important mentor and friend in Frontier Airlines was a man called, a captain called Everett Aiden. And Everett Aiden was the third senior pilot on the list for pilots. I mean, he was the first senior, a very senior pilot. And I flew a whole month with him, and it was such a great month, and I did most of the flying. And when we got back after the month was over, Everett Aiden said, well, Emily, you're just one of the fellows now. And you know, it was like him saying that and him being so senior that the word got around. And after that, it was just like, I belong to the society now. You know what I mean? It was just the acceptance. This is the Boeing Company. That's my favorite airplane. Boeing, Boeing, Boeing. And the National Aviation, or the National Champion Sports Program. I've been there many times. Let's see what else is here. The OX Flat 5 Club of America, and that's another aviation organization. And the OX 5 were the old pilots from the war days, and they call themselves the OX 5. I belong to that organization. I was a Grand Marshal at the Reno Air Races one year. To realize that I was going to retire, it was really difficult. But I retired from Frontier Airlines. And then I did my last job was with the FAA as an inspector. So that would really help. It helped me keep in aviation, but looking at it from a different point of view. So I've always been connected, and I'm still connected with aviation because of my pilot groups and so forth.
I wanted to talk a lot now about how you have inspired other people to become pilots and to become professionals. What have you done to encourage women and girls to get into the aviation profession?
Well, I think after I was flying and with the airlines, I was asked to give a lot of talks at different places. And a lot of it was about aviation, and a lot of it included young women. So I was asked to give talks, I especially like to give talks to young women so I could encourage them in different directions, not just flying, but that women can really do anything they want to do. But of course, I always encourage them to think about flying lessons. And I would tell them how much, you know, they're expensive, but one lesson at a time. And then along the way, there's different ways you can get help with flying lessons nowadays. I always say, just try a few and see if you like it. And I figure if they're connected at all, they're gonna like it. And then it'll just go on from there.
I remember we were looking at a picture of the pink
angels.
Those were students of yours, many of them. Maybe you could just talk really quick about what it was like to teach young women in those early days.
It was encouraging because we had a connection together right away. And I just remember one instance that one woman didn't want a woman instructor, he wanted a man instructor. And I thought that was kind of unusual, but you know, everybody's different. And then after I started teaching and after there were quite a few women learning how to fly, and we started to get together and form a group, and we finally named it the Pink Angels. Now, you think that's a silly name, but in those days, it wasn't. And we all had, we had a photo session one time, and we all wore pink, something in pink, and that's how we got our name, the Pink Angels.
What do you think are the obstacles now for women being involved in flying?
There's,
you said, expense.
Expense, mainly, and home. You have to deal with your home. If you have family and so forth, you know, the mother is pretty important in a household. So there's different things there, and I have many women airline pilots that I'm connected with that fly with different airlines, and they have figured it out, and they've done different things to make sure that they're still being the good mother to the children and paying attention to everything that needs to be done there. And the fathers, which is really great, come more into effect, which I think is even a better deal because there's both parents now are working toward really managing the children.
Can you give an example of a specific woman that was particularly special to you, that you mentored or that you have kept in touch with?
Well, there's a couple of people. That Eileen Collins was one of them, of course, a first lady in space, but she was an airline pilot before then, and I've kept in touch with her over the years. And different organizations that are women pilot organizations. There's one called WPPL, and that means Women Pilots Power Group. And there's many groups, and what these groups get together monthly, sometimes monthly lunches and everything, but it's a real support network for women as they're getting their ratings and as they're getting more senior with the airlines. It helps them to move along and get a lot of good help from everybody else. It's like having a clique. You know, you're talking about flying and I did this or that, or you learn from it too.
Mm-hmm. You've received a tremendous number of honors in your career, and we've seen some of your walls with your awards, and I wondered if you could describe a couple of those honors that mean the most to you.
One award that I really treasure is my Women in Aviation Award, because it's so connected with all of the women in aviation. I have an upcoming I've been nominated for the National Aviation Hall of Fame, and I'm going to be inducted this year in October in Dayton, Ohio. And I'm really, it's like the Academy Awards of Aviation. And Dayton, Ohio is, of course, where the Wright brothers began aviation, right in their home in Dayton, Ohio, where they designed their first airplanes. So there's a lot of history in Dayton. So it's really exciting for me to do that because of all the aviation history and all of the people who have already been inducted. I'm really happy to be in the Colorado Women's Hall of Fame because, of course, I was born and raised in Colorado, and it's really a big highlight in my life. Right behind me on my left is a medal called the National Women's Hall of Fame, which is really very important to me and very, I feel very wonderful that I got it because it brings me into, it highlights women in aviation, which I also think is very important to keep highlighting that because it, to encourage young women to think about flying and that they can do it too.
This podcast was brought to you as a part of the Voices of Great Women Oral History Project, produced by the National Women's Hall of Fame and the Colorado Women's Hall of Fame, with support from the Institute of Museum and Library Services.